discovering voices, building worlds. The Ampliverse.
Welcome to Harry Potter and the Anxious Millennials, a show where we delve week by week into each chapter of the Harry Potter series. We've made it. We're here. We're doing the damn thing. We watched the movie.
We have arrived.
Now I'm going to caveat this. Hello, Ari. Welcome. We are going to caveat this and say that we watched this movie 3 weeks ago. However, I last night scrubbed through and watched some scenes of the movie to refresh before
I watched it today.
Oh, great.
So we both did.
That's great.
Where did you watch it? Where is it available in the US? Because it's on Netflix over here.
It's on Max over here. Yeah.
Good old Max.
Good old Max.
Formerly known as HBO Max and now just Max.
Yeah.
Just Jack.
Okay. So, quickly, I feel like I'm just going to run through just to refresh us where we're at. It's 2007. Okay. This movie, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, is directed by David Yates. It's his first of the last, four. He directs the last four. And this is his first feature-length film. He'd been a television director before this.
Okay.
So that's quite the leap.
Wow.
The screenplay.
Wait, a television what?
A television director.
He'd only directed, yeah.
Yeah, for television.
For some reason, I was like, did you say host?
Oh, yeah. He went
television
from,
director.
He went from host of Family Feud to...
That's why I was like, no. He said TV director. I was like, yeah. He said TV director for sure.
The screenplay is by Michael Goldenberg. It's based on the book of the same title. It's produced by David Heyman and David Barron. It stars. This is the list of people that this stars. Okay. This is the longest list of starring roles I've ever seen. Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter. Rupert Grint, Ron Weasley. Emma Watson, Hermione Granger. Helena Bonham Carter as Bellatrix Lestrange.
Bellatrix.
Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid. Warwick Davis as Flitwick. Mm-hmm. Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort. Michael Gambon as Dumbledore.
Ralph Fiennes.
Michael Gambon as Dumbledore. Brendan Gleeson as... Is he Mad-Eye Moody?
Moody.
Okay.
Moody.
I'm going off my head. Just my head. Richard...
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Good for you.
I have the list of the actors, but I'm trying to...
Okay.
Richard Griffiths. Who is this man? Hold on. Oh, Richard Griffiths plays Vernon Dursley.
Yes.
Jason Isaacs plays Lucius Malfoy. Gary Oldman plays Sirius Black. Alan Rickman plays Severus Snape. Fiona Shaw plays Petunia Dursley. Maggie Smith plays McGonagall. Imelda Staunton plays Umbridge. David Thewlis?
I would say Thewlis. David Thewlis is our lovely Lupin.
Absolutely. Emma Thompson is Trelawney and Julie Walters is Mrs. Weasley.
Amazing. Yeah, and that's it. That's all for the episode. Thanks, guys.
So apparently it doesn't star Mr. Weasley. He doesn't get a starring credit.
He wasn't well enough known at the time.
I think he's the only one with speaking lines practiced. The only adult?
No, Tonks isn't mentioned. I guess she's a new character though. Neither is Kingsley, but also we discussed how Kingsley he does, but I think it's only one.
Yeah. The cinematography is by Slaug. It's Polish. Sławomir Idziak. And I know that that's wrong. I can feel it in my bones that is wrong. And it is edited by Mark Day. Music is by Nicholas Hooper. Production company, Warner Brothers Pictures. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures. Released in the United States on July 11th. Released in the United Kingdom on July 12th of 2007. Weirdly, it came out on June 28th in Tokyo. So Tokyo had it a full 2 weeks ahead.
They must have done a premiere there then. Because remember, they would do international premieres. Because I remember seeing all the photos. Do you know what's crazy about this movie? I can remember going to the premiere of pretty much every other movie, but
except for this one.
I'm trying to remember, because when the next year we went, because we were in Greece, we were in the Greece cast.
Yeah.
And so we went.
This would have been between freshman and sophomore year, I think. I think that's okay. Right. So then
we would have been like, you were doing Honk.
I was doing Honk.
And I was doing Beauty and the Beast.
I was on my East Coast tour of Honk Junior.
As Honk himself, you were the title role.
As Mr. Honk. It's the titular role.
Yeah. Forget Harry Potter. Let's talk about Honk.
Let's talk about Honk, honey. Let's not talk about Honk.
Yeah, I cannot remember. I'm like, who would I have gone with? I probably went with like Brooke and Justine, or at least one of them.
I probably just went with my mom.
It's so weird. It's the one I can't remember.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask my mom if she remembers if we went together, or if she remembers like what was going on at that time. I just cannot remember.
Yeah.
It's so weird. It's the only one.
The running time of this film, Ari, is 138 minutes. It's the second shortest of all the Harry Potter films. For the longest
second shortest. What's the shortest?
I don't know. I didn't look
that
up.
You know what, though? I think that that makes sense. I think that the fact that this book was the longest doesn't really make sense to me. Like, I'm like, why was this the longest one?
Yeah. Okay. What
was it, the third one? Is the third one the shortest?
154, 138, 146. Oh, the last one. The last one's the shortest, 130 minutes.
Wow. Oh my God. And the last one is like iconic. So good job. Hats off to them.
And I cried for 135 of those 130 minutes when I watched that movie in the theaters.
Are you kidding? Because I actually did. I cried the whole movie. Me too. Yeah. From the moment the Harry Potter logo popped up, I was crying. I was so sad.
It was rough for me. The budget was 150 to 200 million, and the box office was 942.2 million. It is the second highest grossing film of the year. And apparently, Warner Brothers claimed that it lost $167 million from this film.
Oh, like it didn't do as well as they thought it was going to, even though it made the second highest
$900 million.
Yeah.
But also, like, people, they just say stuff. They really just say anything.
Also, I'm sorry, the royalties that you get, like from other Harry Potter, I just don't. There's no way you're set for life. If you were a minor character in the Harry Potter films, you're set for life. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced. If there is someone that was in the Harry Potter films who is not somewhat set up for life to have a comfortable life, let me know that I'm wrong. But that's my impression.
Yeah,
that you're good for forever, pretty much.
That's all I have. That's all the background I think we need. Because I did not read the IMDb trivia page because, girl, it was so long. I said no.
Oh, really? You were like, not today.
Not today. You all can read it on your own time. This is not a showgaze episode. This is a Harry Potter and the Anxious Millennials episode, okay? To be clear.
I do want to say before we get into it, I have tried to make this a bit more summarized than the movie episodes that we've done in the past. Because I think for whatever reason, the movie episodes have ended up being like 2 hours or like an hour and a half each because we'll like divide it up. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this is going to go a little bit quicker. So right off the bat, we've got the opening credits. And when Adam and I were watching it together, we rewound it because I was like, excuse me, is that the Pensieve transforming into the sun?
Yeah.
I was like, is that what's happening there? Listeners/fellow movie viewers, Harry Potter fans.
Let us know.
Do you know what I'm talking about? Does anyone else notice that? So it opens with Harry sitting on a swing in this dry ass desert.
Okay. Pause.
Already.
My first note. So I was watching this last night and I had the subtitles on because at this point in my life, I need subtitles. I don't care anymore. I am not ashamed to admit it. I'll happily admit it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Girl, why did this movie start? So it starts with the, like, there's like a radio DJ saying like, oh, it's the hottest it's been in England. Like, it's a whole, that's the background audio.
Yeah.
He says it's in the mid 30s. Okay, right. Obviously, that's how Britain gauges temperature. That's fine. That's how pretty much everywhere else but America gauges temperature. Yeah, good old Celsius. Tell me why the next sentence out of his mouth is, it's actually in the mid 90s Fahrenheit today. I was like, they just wouldn't say that. He would not say that. That is only for your American audience.
Stop pandering.
And also, like, It is clear enough through other parts in this first part of this film that it is extremely hot. You didn't even need to explain to you. You don't even need either line about it being hot because, like, it's shot so it looks like it's like
a desert. It's
fully like, yeah, a desert.
A wasteland. It's yes. Mad Max up in here, girl.
And then, like, later, Petunia's like about to have a heat stroke. Yeah. Like, we get it's hot. You didn't need to be like,
also,
and also Americans, it is mid 90s and we'll get to 100 by the end of the week.
Yeah. Also Americans, also our good old friends in the US of A. Let me tell you. I just want to say, obviously, I have not lived in the UK for even a year yet, but they really were just hammering this home how hot it was, because even when it was hot here, when we had that heat wave, mm-hmm. the grass did not look like that. The grass was still green. It's still green here.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that is like very extreme, which, I mean, Keith did say, he was like, oh, sometimes in the summer, that's when the grass will get like brown. But I was like, you would have thought that was like LA during a drought.
Yes.
I was like, I don't know if we needed to go that far. Like, it's obvious it's hot.
We buy it. I buy it's hot.
Yeah, I was like, we don't need it to be a wasteland. So Harry's sitting on this swing in this dry-ass desert, and Dudley and his chav friends come up. And Harry's like, did you beat up another 10-year-old? And he's like, this one deserved it. And I was like, oh, is this like... He's like doing a new little accent.
Oh yeah, he's a new new character. He's a brand new character.
I was like, what is this? This is a different accent. I was like, maybe he's going for the chav thing, but it still doesn't sound like a chav voice to me.
It's interesting because he's not written as a chav in the books. It's fine if they want to do that for the... It's fine. I don't have a problem with it, but...
He's like a rich boy.
Yeah.
I mean, not that a rich boy can't be a chav, but like that he's more of a rich boy that's turned into a bit of a bully.
He reminds me of the guy
on a wrestling team.
He reminds me of the guy from Heartstopper. The like tall one who's like, I quit.
Oh my God. What is his name? Harry.
Is it the tall blonde one? I'm not talking about the one that like, okay. Yeah, probably.
The one that's like homophobic and is always like, it's just Benta. Like, it's just Benta, Nick Nelson. They come up and they're talking about, Harry's like, oh, you beat up another 10-year-old. He's like, this one deserved it. And then he starts teasing Harry about moaning in his sleep and talking about Cedric. And he's like, who's Cedric? Is Cedric your boyfriend? And he's like, he's dead like your mom. Where's your mom? She dead. It was just like,
that's so weird. It's such a weird...
Is she dead? Like, he just keeps doing weird things with his mouth. And then, I'm sorry, we're going to talk about the weather a lot in this film.
Oh, it's
a
big weather film.
So a storm starts rolling in, and I was like, okay, so, like, I get that, like, the Dementors bring the cold. Like, they bring the cold, they bring that ice, it gets chilly.
They bring
chilly.
The cold and this, that pink venom.
Get him. this storm rolls in, and I was like, I mean, okay, but, like, you're using that to kind of symbolize that the Dementors are I was confused by it. I was
I think it gets more extreme in the later films too, doesn't it? When the Death Eaters are just like out and about, all of a sudden, like there's just like weather up front.
Yeah, I was like, that's not, if you're going for like an actual, what would we call that? When it's like the weather is also affected by the magic. I don't know, just a weather effect, like that it's having something to do with that.
Yeah, it's like, just weird because the weather, you would then think that like Hogwarts any is constantly changes. Besieged by weather situations, yeah. But it has never been.
So. Yeah, so it was just a little bit strange to me because I was like, it's a constant thing in this film that is like, when something bad is about to happen, the weather gets worse. But I'm like, but sometimes the weather's just bad, girl. It's not always connected to like Dementors and Death Eaters.
It is so funny how the like coloring immediately goes from that like yellow, it's hot, to just like desert blue color. Green. We're underwater.
And then it's like pouring down rain. Yeah. I was like, well, you would think y'all would be relieved because you need the rain.
Yes, clearly. The grass is crying for it.
And I love that, like, all the teenage boys are, like, very scared of the weather. Like, they're like, D, let's go, D, D.
Yeah.
Y'all, this is England. People just walk in the rain. Yeah. It'll be pouring and people walk without umbrellas. Doesn't I'm sorry. Rain, like, I do not believe you're afraid of this little rain
300 cloud. Days out of the 365 days of the year. Like, isn't it extremely precipitous?
It rains all the time. Yeah. And also, I have seen people walking in t-shirts and shorts in like a violent rainstorm. Like people are not fazed by the rain.
Ari, they don't want to get these beautiful jerseys wet. They are stunning.
yeah, the jerseys, their chav outfits are very important. So suddenly it's just Harry and Dudley running home. So the other friends have run off in another direction, apparently. And they take cover under an over... I'm guessing this is just an overpass. And then the Dementors appear. And this, it is more of like the... It's like the little light underneath, like flickers. And then there's like ice.
Yeah.
Right? So that's like the typical Dementor. But I was like, with this storm, are we supposed to believe that this is an indication of the Dementors like traveling? It just, I was a bit confused by it. And I continue to feel a bit confused.
The storm comes so quickly.
Yeah. Like you would have seen the clouds. We would have seen some little storm clouds in the background when Harry was sitting on the swing. So the Dementors appear. I don't like this interpretation of the Dementors.
Here we go. I knew we were going to get to this.
They're not scary. Also, there's no hood. They're like skeletal
cloaks. They're not. They don't look. Okay, it's okay.
What is this?
Okay.
Didn't make sense to me.
Changes that don't bother me because they happened. They happened without whatever. I don't mind. Obviously, Michael Gambon had to take over as Dumbledore because Richard Harris passed away. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I understand. And then they're going to like kind of shift what the character looks like so you understand, like, whatever, fine. Things that I don't like that they just like change out of nowhere. I hate that they changed Flitwick. Then kept him as this like new Flitwick. Why?
Yeah.
That's dumb. Yeah. It always bothers me.
Yeah.
The Dementor thing. You had already established what they like. What's the purpose? What's the reason?
Why change it? Why reinvent it?
I'm assuming they're working with the same visual effects companies. I'm sure they just still have the exact same files from the two movies ago. Like,
thank you. I just don't get it. But what I will say, I'm going to go completely on the other side here. I'm going to flip sides and say, I love this new interpretation of the Patronus.
Oh, yeah.
This is what the Patronus should look like.
Yeah.
But it should have looked like this from the get-go.
Yeah.
This was what it should have done from the beginning because this is, you know what I've realized? I don't know what this is called, but I am very much a person that I think you need to reference the text and try and nail exactly what how the text described something. So obviously the text describes the Patronus as charging down the Dementor. And so that's always what I, as the reader, imagined. Mm-hmm. And I doubt that, I'm sure that's pretty standard for everyone because that's how it was described. So I just think if that's how it's described in the book, when you're bringing that to life on film, you want to try and make it as close to that as possible. Mm-hmm. I know not everyone's like that. That's just how I am. So when it is something that is like slightly off from that and they've kind of just gone their own interpretation with it, like how Emma's dress in the fourth film was pink. I was like, why? Just make it blue. It was blue in the book.
Yes.
Just have it be blue.
We're Team Meriwether. Make it blue. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it blue. So things like that, I do notice I tend. So like, that's why I don't like the Dementors, because this is not how the Dementors were described in the book. They have a hood. So it doesn't make sense to me.
It's almost weird. Like, I don't even understand. It's weird. It feels like they were like, what if the hood was like
their
like
head
skin tight? And then it's just like a little cutout of where the, and I don't, it looks like,
and you can see their whole neck. It's like a skull with a neck.
It looks like a, this is going to be really weird. It looks like a cloth version of like a gimp outfit, like a BDSM, like leather, like full.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird. It's a weird
I was going to say it looks like a face kini, but that's even better.
Yes, it's Rue at the end of season 12. Is that 12 when they did the?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, where was I?
But I do like how fast they are in this.
Oh, see, I don't even remember.
They just like, they fly in much more quickly than like in book three. They're very like,
kind of Louis. Oh. Just drifting about.
Yeah. Just like a slight breeze might knock him off course.
So the stag is beautiful, gorgeous. We love him.
Sure.
He chases down the Dementors and they're safe. Mrs. Fig shows up and walks them home, revealing that she's a squib and she knows Dumbledore. I don't know if she word for word says she's a squib. So like,
no, I don't think she does in this movie.
If you didn't read the book, you would be like, who's this woman?
Yeah.
What's going on? But we know that she knows Dumbledore.
But
no mention of Mundungus, correct? I don't remember her mentioning Mundungus.
No, Mundungus is not mentioned in this film at all.
Yeah.
They, I don't think the book, or I'm sorry, the movie series really explains what a squib is, though. Like in book,
no.
In the second movie, there's like a reference to it.
There's
I think.
More.
But even more then, of an explanation. It's, you don't get the like the scene where he like finds Filch's like teach a squib how to use magic thing. So,
yeah. What is it? His quick spell?
Yeah. Quick. Yeah.
I don't remember what it's called either. So they arrive at home. And of course, Dudley blames Harry by just like pointing at him. And I just have to say that I love Vernon and Petunia's summer outfits.
Petunia looks, she's the best dressed character in this film. And she has one scene. She has one scene in this movie. Oh,
I know. Her outfit is so cute.
It's so cute.
And also the way that she is like dying in this heat. I was like, this was me over the summer when it was this hot and there just wasn't AC. And I made a note. I was like, for the love of God, people in the UK just need to get AC. Like, you can have one that you literally store in your garage every other time it's not hot, but like you need to have something.
Shouldn't Petunia be a redhead?
No, she's blonde.
Is that normal for like one sister to be a redhead and one sister to be blonde?
Yeah, it can happen.
Oh, okay.
It is a little weird that she doesn't have red hair. In terms of, it would have made, it kind of, it could have helped. Do you know what I mean? Like make a more sister, establishing that family line, but whatever. Harry does receive a letter from Mathilda, but he only gets one. And Adam, I don't know if you noticed this, but I would just like to say that on this letter, it had confidential printed on it. And then the letter reads itself out loud.
Yeah, not.
And I was like,
that's not how confidentiality works.
What the hell is this? What? I was like, you can't, don't have it say confidential then. Yeah. Like, well, you put that on there.
I really like the interpretation there of it reading itself. Because
me too.
It's a much better choice than like Harry reading it and like having to explain silently what it says. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, just don't put confidential then, because girl, it's not.
Yeah, because her delivery of the letter is like perfect. It's specifically the hoping you are well, Mavalda Hopka, like at the end.
I'm curious who.
Amazing.
I'm gonna IMDb who did that voice.
Okay.
You can keep going though.
Okay. Yeah, let me know when you find it. So the Dursleys. The Dursleys take Dudley to the hospital as Mrs. Fig watches through the window. And I love that Vernon mouths he's not feeling well.
It's so funny. It's weird. They may, in the later movies, they like, he's such a menace in those first movies. And he like becomes more bumbling
as the movies more progress. Comedic,
he's like, not an antagonist anymore.
Yeah. So then we have a nice little cut to Harry punching the wall with both fists, which makes the photo of his parents fall in the glass crack. And this upsets Hedwig, which I was like, I'm Hedwig in this moment. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? So then he's like, oh, sorry, Hedwig, which I was like, this is the first time that he apologizes to we never see him give Hedwig an apology in the book, but he does apologize to her in the movie.
The voice of Mafalda Hopkirk is Jessica Hines. She is credited in the film as Jessica Stevenson, so I'm assuming it's probably her maiden name before she got married.
Okay.
She is known for, she's in Shaun of the Dead, apparently, which I think I've seen.
And then after Harry sits down on the bed and kind of chills out a little bit, he ends up falling asleep and has a dream about Cedric being murdered. Mm-hmm. And then there is like a little moment. I don't know if this is symbolizing the start of the Voldemort stuff, but he has the thing with Cedric. And I think there's like a flash cut of Voldemort. And then he like wakes up. Mm-hmm. And the Order of the Phoenix is coming into his room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ooh.
I want to, before we get into this, I just want to say I have nothing against this actress. She actually was in Game of Thrones, and I think that she's a great actress. It's nothing against her. Why is this the portrayal that they decided to do of Tonks? It's like not correct in any way. What's the only thing that is accurate is that like she kind of stumbles at one point.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, what she's wearing is a wig. So why wouldn't you have just given her a spiky wig? Like, were they worried about making her too, like, queer coded? So they were like, give her long hair.
I don't think that was really even probably part of the conversation. It was probably just, it's easier for the visual effects department if she had, like, a bigger cut to, like, it's easier to display the color change on it maybe than if it was like smaller and more condensed. It's more noticeable if it's more of like a shaggy, whatever the hell is on her head situation.
Nothing. A shaggy nothing. And there wasn't even like a fun haircut. I was just like.
My frustration. And then the only moment. Like, yeah.
What? Go ahead. You might have been about to say the same thing I am.
My thing about like she is. You just could have done a lot more. And I get that this movie spends so little time with her. Like, why are you going to waste a bunch of money on this? But like, sure. She's your only, what is it called? Not Animagus. Shapeshifter.
Metamorph.
Yes.
Metamorph Magus.
Mommy told me to mash my M&Ms.
Metamorph Magus.
She's the only one in this whole movie series. So like, just give her like, have her be like, ugh, I'm not feeling short hair today. And then like grow it down to her ass or something crazy. Just like,
which she did. Yeah.
Do something. Instead, do something fun.
Cause I was like, this is the thing. You have her have the purple hair for like the whole time, essentially. why don't you, one, have her have the correct type of purple hair and then just like leave her with that? Like if you're not going to actually have the whole bit be included, because it's like later she does have the bit where she's like changing her nose, but she changes her nose into like a duck beak. And I was just like, you don't even use it. Like you don't even use what that, what her gift is as an actual skill. It's yeah. just like a little bit of like for a little laugh. And I was like,
trick.
Yeah, even when this movie first came out and I was younger, I still remember being like, none of this is right. Like it just all was off.
Yeah, and the when she like gets mad and her hair turns red, that like really bugs me because it's not, it has nothing to do with.
It's like she doesn't control, it's like she can't control it.
And that's, it's such a lazy, it's such a lazy, like, oh, she got hot-headed, so now her hair is red. Like, it's just
it's red.
Like, it's such a boring interpretation of, like, the cool idea that this character's magic.
And it just wasn't, like, it was like, girl, he called you Nymphadora. Like, just chill. Like, the fact that
don't
she was,
call don't me call that me. Name.
Don't call me Nymphadora. I was like, all right.
Okay, girl.
And then she, like, shook it off. And I was like, no, it's just all, don't even do it then. Just don't even, yeah, just have her have the purple spiky hair the whole time and just leave it.
Yeah.
Because they don't ever have her disguise into anyone else.
No.
Anyway, so that's how we feel about that.
And also, I'm going to say this, the hair colors they choose for her do not complement her skin tone whatsoever. And it's very frustrating.
I didn't think that about the purple. But I don't think I was looking long enough to even notice. I just was like, that's wrong.
It's so bizarre to me because like this girl can change her hair color at will. And you think she's choosing one that's unflattering?
Yeah, girl, what are you talking about? They're flying through the sky. They're flying through London. They fly past a bunch of ships. They fly past Parliament. Adam and I at this part were like, oh, wow, real private, guys. Like, I understand you're doing a little, God. Like, wow effect. But I was like, the whole point of this is they're trying to be so secretive. And this is what y'all decided to do.
This is the secret order of the secret phoenix that is so secret that that Dumbledore is the secret keeper. And yet
they're just flying around up and under bridges.
like, almost running into boats. What are we?
Yeah. And that bit was weird, too. Like, the way that Tonks is, like, playing with Harry. Like, I was like, is she, like, flirting with him? I was just like, what? This is a little weird. I didn't need it. It was weird.
Yeah.
I understand it's hard to establish, like, in the books, they did a really good job of kind of establishing that, like, Tonks is a bit younger, which, like, that woman, I think, was too old to be playing Tonks. So there's your first mistake. You could have had someone that was a bit younger, that and then Harry woman. And her would have connected. Because I don't know her name. Nothing against her. No, She's a great actress.
Let me look it up. Natalia Tena.
Natalia Tena.
Oh, she's gorgeous.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Her eyes are huge. I'm sending you this photo. My God. She's born in 84.
Okay, I guess she's only a couple years older then. Because I always pictured Tonks to be like 20, like very young. But I don't know how long they're supposed to go through Auror training. So maybe
she
23 is the more accurate.
She can't be 20 because she would have been at Hogwarts with Harry.
No, because Harry's
if she
15
was,
now. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, no.
If she's right? 20, then she would...
She would have been there when he first came, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, not that he would have necessarily known a seventh year, but I do think somebody who can change their appearance at will would probably get
it would
bit
be
of
pretty
attention.
Memorable. Yeah. 21 then. Whatever was the age where it was like she didn't go to school with him, but yeah, I don't know why. She looks older than 23. Which again might have been her styling for this movie and not actually her, but she does look older. Mm-hmm. So I was just a little like, with how they're flying out in the open, that was a little strange to me. Then they arrive at number 12 Grimald Place. It slides out from the other two houses, which I was fine with that. That was a nice transition, I think. It's fine. And then, like, the order walks into the room. And then again, she like gives like Harry like a little like she like saunters past him and gives him like a little wink. And I was just like, what's going on? You're confusing me. What is the dynamic?
Yeah.
Is that just like normal British, like trying to like connect with a student thing? I was like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So Harry gets a brief glimpse of Sirius and Lupin meeting with the order before Molly comes out and sends him upstairs. And Adam, little Wolfstar, because that we've learned that's their ship name. Mm. Wolfstar, we're a little cozy here. I'm going to send you this photo. You've got to include it.
Okay.
When you post this so our readers can see too. But I was like, they're like definitely, his like arm is around him. They're like cuddling.
Hot.
I'm into it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You see it?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I mean, hello. They're a couple.
For sure.
So then we get a brief moment with Creature, where we and Harry are both introduced to Creature, we the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And Creature is like exactly how I pictured him. Nailed it. Great.
Yeah. They almost Harry tried to cut him from the movie. And then,
oh, I didn't know that.
And Joe was like, he has to do something important for plot wise for a later film.
But they don't even ever reference him.
I think there's a shot of him taking some of the stuff. Isn't there a shot where he's like taking some of the stuff they throw away back?
No.
No? Okay. That's Mm-mm. what it said in the article, but. I didn't watch Creature scenes. I'll be honest. I didn't feel the need to go back and watch the scenes with Creature last night.
Yeah, valid. So Harry goes into his bedroom where Ron and Hermione are waiting for him. And it's pretty much just like the book. They're just like, Dumbledore made us promise not to tell you. The only thing that's different is I would say Harry is like more pout. Like he doesn't ever actually yell at them. He's more pouty.
Yes, there's a severe lack of yelling in this film, which I almost think is like an overcorrection. Like I do need him a couple times to be like
to
an
yell.
Angsty teenager. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fine.
So they explain to Harry, you know, the Order of the Phoenix is a thing, basically. They're like, oh, yeah, this is headquarters for Order of the Phoenix. And then Fred and George pop in and suggest listening in with their extendable ears. Ginny pops down as they're listening, and then Crookshank steals, like, bites the ear off so they can't hear.
Yeah.
And then finally, Harry's able to reunite with Sirius while Lupin looks on proudly. And I just want to say, I understand Harry has, like, this connection with Sirius, but Harry just spent a whole year with Lupin, and he's essentially just been completely cast aside.
He's definitely spent more time with Lupin than he's done with Harry.
Yes. Lupin has spent more time with Harry than Sirius has. But like, I mean, I guess he hasn't seen Lupin for like a whole year. Fine. But like, Lupin was like your fave teacher and you definitely had a connection with him. And now you're just kind of like, meh. Oh, hey, you're here too.
Yeah, it's weird.
So then they all have dinner together and it's revealed what the prophet, a.k.a. Fudge, in the ministry have been saying about Harry via the prophet. So Sirius is like, we think that Voldemort is trying to rebuild his army again. And then I do like how they kind of fix this a little bit. And it's Harry that guesses
is it a weapon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's not told it's a weapon. He, in his mind, has just assumed, which I was like, that's a good fix.
And Molly interrupts.
Yes. Molly's like, we're done. So then Harry has a weird dream where we hear Voldemort's voice, like in his head, just saying like, Harry, in his head. So I was like, okay, so is this him trying to establish that connection again? Like, they're just planting these little breadcrumbs for us.
They had a completely unfair challenge of having to like portray this like weird liminal dream space on screen.
Yeah, like how are you going to do that? Yeah. So It's the next day, and Harry and Arthur are traveling via the underground to get to Harry's hearing.
Everything is moving so fast in this movie.
Dude, yes, God. That's what we were like. The pacing is like, we are just like trucking along. Yeah. We are just going. Mm-hmm. So they take the phone booth, just like in the book. The ministry is very grand. I just really have a very big complaint about the fountain. Do you know what it is, Adam?
That they're separated.
Why? And just the wizard is separated. So I guess the Ministry of Magic is patriarchal as well. Hello, here we are. Because I was like, you literally put the witch and then all the creatures on one thing and the wizard on the other. What are you trying to say?
It's weird because, okay, couple things. It's weird that they made it two fountains. Because I don't even understand.
Because there, no reason.
It's weird that they even made it, like, had the fountain be a part of it because they don't end up using it in the way that the book does.
No.
So it's just like, it's just a fountain. It doesn't do anything. And then third, it's weird because Dumbledore makes a point of commenting on, like, the fact that the creatures are looking up adoringly at the wizards in the book. Like, it's like pointed out to be like, this is the problem with wizarding community, and we are like, it's very clear, but it's not commented. It's just it's so like, oh, you got it, I guess, a quarter right. I guess you
tried
to add it, but
yeah, exactly. You should have just not included it at all. Then
it's we symbolic. Didn't need it it's at an all. It's emblematic of the situation. It's like, okay,
yeah, it's really strange. So I just didn't understand that. And I take really big issue that, like, you just had the wizard, like, at least have the witch and wizard be together if you're going to do that shit. It was so weird to me. I was like, that is just such a boot.
Yeah.
Boot that. So this is very different than in the book where Kingsley just appears, like, he just talks to Arthur openly. Cause in the book there's like that layer of, they're trying to make it seem like they don't like each other. Mm-hmm. Not in this. He'll just talk to Arthur openly. He just whispers in his ear in the elevator.
Yeah.
So he tells Arthur that Harry's trial has been moved up to right this very moment.
Still no lines.
So they rush down.
No lines. Still no lines. Shackled.
Yeah. Said it quietly in Arthur's ear.
Yeah.
And then he is like, oh, we got to go right now. Arthur says to Harry, your trial's right now or in 5 minutes. So they go down to, we don't know. We hear Department of Mysteries, right? I'm trying to remember. When the elevator opens.
Yes, it says, yeah, she says Department of Mysteries.
Okay. So, oh, does it? I'm really second guessing myself now.
I know it does. I know it does at the end when they go down at the end of the
movie.
That's
why I'm like, but it technically is the same. That's why I want to double check. Cause I'm like, it is the same floor supposedly. Mm-hmm. Here, let me look. Cause it's, since it's Netflix.
Yeah. The Department of Mysteries and Wizengamot share the same bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, she says it. Okay. So she says Department of Mysteries and then they
Department of Mysteries.
So yeah, great point though. Like, okay, so whatever. Why is it down there? So they're walking to the room where he's going to have his hearing, and they walk past Lucius and Fudge outside a very particular looking door we want to remember for later. And they're just having a discussion. It sounds like they're discussing Harry's hearing, but we don't know for sure. So yeah, apparently it's just straight up on the same floor as the Department of Mysteries, but all right. There is no Bode. Oh, look, it did it again.
Oh yeah. There's no Bode. Mine
There's no Bode. Let me use my pointer finger. There's no Bode.
What if you did a middle finger and also had an emoji?
Dumbledore luckily shows up 3 hours early, and Mrs. Vig is a witness, similar to in the book. Umbridge and Amelia Bones are both there, similar to the book. And then they do a vote. He's exonerated. Dumbledore dips out.
Wow, does you are speeding through this. Okay, first, wow. Okay, wait. Because I did watch
the... What do you want to talk about
I did watch the full Wiz and Gambit scene. Okay, I'm confused what the two colors of the robes mean. It has to mean something. Like, there's a red group and a black
house
group.
And the House and the Senate.
Well, sure, but it's technically, like, isn't it supposed to be, like, the Supreme Court? It's just weird. But I also don't know anything about, like, British judicial system, so I don't actually know anything. So that was a curiosity that I had. I love that Dolores still has, like, a pink collar around her, like, black outfit. I love that detail. I think it's great.
Yeah, it's great.
This is the first scene with Imelda, and I'm going to say right now, she is the MVP of this film. She is so incredible in this role. It was, like, her audition to be the queen. It's, like, so... there's a lot of similarity in what she does with this role and what she does as, like, Elizabeth on The Crown, but... and then the last thing is I really like, the lady who plays, Mrs. Bones. What's her? Amelia Bones.
Yeah. Amelia Bones.
I love this actress. I love this performance. Yeah. It's so interesting, even though there's, like, barely anything for her to do. I think it's, like, really good.
Yeah, she's great. I think this introduction to Umbridge is excellent.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
This is our first impression of her. It's like, oh,
and she, like, leaves.
So when we see her later,
yeah,
we're like, oh, it's that woman.
And Cornelius is so, like, laying it on thick. Like, he is, like, fully like, well, I'm now a villain.
yeah, exactly. So once again, as we said, we're just straight up trucking along, because from this trial, as soon as Dumbledore, like, dips out, the next scene is they're literally walking. They're at King's Cross walking to platform 9 3/4. Yes.
I had a question. So in the book, Dumbledore reveals that the reason he had been distant from Harry is because he realized that there was a connection. What does he realize there's a connection between Harry? Does he realize the connection after the events of book 4, or is it once he hears about the dreams? Because when we read the chapter, it felt to me like it was like, oh, he was keeping distance because after the events with, like, Christmas with the snake, that's when he was like, oh, there's definitely a link, and I don't want Voldemort to be able to spy on me.
Yeah,
but he's clearly distant from the beginning. Yes.
Yeah.
Even over the summer, he's not allowed to, like, learn anything.
So I know, obviously, didn't Harry write a letter? Or, like, isn't Harry telling... Does he tell Sirius about the...
About the dream?
Dreams. But he can't really put anything in writing.
Yeah.
Before, anyway. I don't know.
It's
why would he? Because there isn't really a moment in the fourth book where Dumbledore would think that.
Right.
There's
not a good, until after the Arthur situation, there's not a good reason that he's, like, being cold and distant. So it just is like, I don't know. It's weird. I know. I didn't even notice it really until I watched the movie again, like, last night.
Yeah, because,
like,
it's right off the bat.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense. Very obvious.
Yeah.
He's like, oh.
Yeah. yeah. Bye. because even in the book, it's like that, though. He, like, leaves without saying a word to Harry. He doesn't even look at him.
Yeah.
So it's like, what?
Yeah.
So we cut to them walking to platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross. Sirius appears disguised as Padfoot, and then he, like, sneaks off into a little waiting room, and then they just, like, give him and Harry privacy. And I was like, once again, first off, what is this room at, like, King's Cross, like, that no one is in? Yeah. I was like,
famously then, empty station, you know.
And then Moody is, like, Pappy to guard the door while they have this interaction that was like sprung upon him. Like, I'm like, yeah, right. Moody's going to be like, no.
Also, Moody is like not, is he wearing a hat?
No.
Is his eye just out and about? Like,
yeah,
sir, your eye is still magic.
Yeah. Not wearing a hat.
He needs to have the like.
Yeah. The bowler. Very Fosse.
Yeah.
I always think of Fosse. So then while they're in this random waiting room that is being guarded happily by the Order of the Phoenix, Sirius presents the photo of the Order of the Phoenix to Harry. Mm-hmm. And this is where we see Neville's parents. Mm-hmm. And this is where Adam said, okay, Neville's mom should have played Tonks because she's got that nice little short spiky pixie cut. And I was like, yes, because isn't that okay? I know Tonks was described as having a heart-shaped face, which I'm trying to think who has a heart-shaped face. I can't think of anyone off the top of my head, but I imagined like someone that looks kind of more youthful or like cheruby with like a pixie cut, like a little like she, Neville's mom.
She
mom.
Okay,
Neville's mom.
Tonks should look like she just walked off. She just walked from campus at Bryn Mawr University. Like, she should look like an East Coast liberal all-girls school. She's not a lesbian, but she's dabbling. She's, like, that's the energy Tonks has, okay?
Yeah.
That's my Tonks, girl.
That's my Tonks. Yeah, a heart-shaped face is like Reese Witherspoon.
Sure.
Ooh, Ruby Rose too has a heart shaped face.
I know nothing about like face shapes, so this is all you.
Okay. So we see Neville's parents. I think that's the only other people that are pointed out besides like Harry's parents, Sirius, Lupin, and Wormtail is standing behind them in the photo. Mm. Those are like the only other people that are specifically called out, mm-hmm. Or like we have a close up shot on. Mm-hmm. And then, all right, I don't even know what to say about this.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm going to say?
Is it? I don't know.
Harry sees Voldemort in a all black suit at the train station, and he's like revealed behind like a little cloud of train steam.
Yeah, he's business cash for sure.
Business cash.
Yeah.
Girl, no, he was going out. Dressy cash.
Dressy cash. Yeah.
I was like, what? Like, just have him in his normal robe. That was a really strange choice to me, especially with everything we know about Voldemort. I was like, you're literally at a train station for going to Hogwarts. He should just be in wizard robes.
Okay, so
that was so strange to me.
I was thinking about this last night, and I was trying to figure, because it's such a weird choice. It is clearly a choice. Like,
it's clearly intentional. Yeah.
So what I came up with is that they are trying to, there's only so much they can do, but they're trying to get the audience to be as confused as to whether like Harry is like going crazy and like, cause this is like, Harry is like having this vision. This is a Harry like PTSD moment. Weirdly, he put him in a skinny Tom Ford suit. I will say that's bizarre. But like, I think they're trying to be, it's trying to mesh with all of the other visions. So it's like, what is the truth? Like, confuse the viewer to an extent to be like, well, whatever. Even though obviously like most viewers have read the book. So
yeah,
none of us are confused.
Do you know what I think would have been clearer?
Sure.
If he would have seen someone in a black suit that was bald and like thought it was Voldemort, and then there was like the steam like moved and it was just like a normal person.
Yeah.
Because then I would have been like, oh, he's like seeing him everywhere. Like you said, yeah, PTSD. Yeah. He's being triggered by thinking he's seeing Voldemort at every turn.
Yeah.
Like I would have been like, okay, that makes a bit more sense. But because we just see Voldemort and then he's on the train.
Yeah.
Like, it literally is just like him on the train looking out the window.
Yeah.
So I was like, was that a dream?
Yeah.
Did you have another dream? Like, I was just like, all right.
We get a lot of the neck stuff. This is
yes,
the first
a lot
time
of the
get...
neck twitch. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's weird.
So they take the train ride. This is the beginning of how we're seeing that Harry's kind of alienating himself. So, like, he is sitting in the compartment with Ron and Hermione, but he's, like, facing away from them. And they're they're having their own discussion. Like, Emma has a little look she throws to him, and then they continue with their talk.
Yeah.
So they arrive at Hogwarts. They have this exchange with... Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle that Adam and I had complete opposite reactions to. Do you remember this?
No. What did I say?
I was like, oh, I just love, I was like, the three of them together are just such a trio. Oh. Like, I was like, and you were like, I didn't believe, really? Because I didn't believe that at all.
I think this is like the last movie where they are stuck in some of their like child acting tics. I think that 6, 7, and 8, I think they get better about it. Mm. But I think this one, I still could hear, like, Emma has a way she delivers lines only as Hermione. She's never done it in any other role I've ever seen her in, where I know it's only because she's been doing it for so long that her body is just like, oh, this is how I perform Hermione. And it's like, yeah, but no one talks like that. No one on earth would ever say anything this way. It's interesting.
I did notice that more the second time that I watched it.
Yeah.
Like you said, that it's kind of like, blah, 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 blah. Like, it just is like, comes out so fast almost with that. Like, she doesn't take a breath.
Yeah.
Which I was like, I mean, Hermione could, that could be, like you said, a choice as Hermione. That, like, that's the energy she associates with Hermione.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is more, I would say it's the most noticeable in this film,
yeah,
at least from the ones we've seen recently.
Yeah, I think it's I do think that is a bit of Hermione's energy, but I think also, I think these screenplays, well, I mean, we can talk about the fucking books too, but I think the screenplays do a disservice to Ron and Hermione, and they make them less three-dimensional than the books do. Mm-hmm. And the books barely make them three-dimensional, but yeah, they like, it's very like Hermione's always haughty and Ron is always funny. And that's like the whole, that's it all the time.
Yeah. I think in terms of, which like, I just want to be clear, obviously talking about all of them. I pity anyone who had to grow up being like a child actor you are watching them go through all the things they're learning as an actor. Yeah. Like if you would have seen me and Adam when we were like 15, girl, we would have been doing the same shit.
Oh,
like
for sure.
We would have been making the same. It's just you're that age is an actor. Like unless you're somehow a brilliant teenage actor, which like they do exist. But I think honestly, like out of all of them, I think Rupert is the most consistent throughout the films.
Yes.
With his acting. Yeah. Like he's just the most, it's the most, he always seems pretty comfortable or like he's the most relaxed in Ron.
Weirdly, the only movie where I feel like he's not relaxed in, I think is 7 when he has to do his whole like bit.
Yeah.
But I think it's because because it's the most like, in the books or in the movies, Ron has ever had to like do that. Cause even in book 4, even in movie 4, when he's mad at Harry, quote unquote, it's still like, it's still got a comedic element to it with the like talking to someone to tell someone out like that whole sequence.
Yeah. I'm not an owl.
I'm not an owl.
But yeah. So anyways, they get to Hogwarts. Neville joins them with his little cactus plant that I can't remember what it's called right now. Sorry.
Mimbulus Mimbletonia.
Yes. Mimbulus Mimbletonia.
That was off the dome, baby. The
top of your head. Harry sees the Thestrals in this moment, which Neville should have seen them too.
Yes. He should
and he
have.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
So that's an issue. And then we meet Luna.
We meet Luna.
I don't know what to... I mean, I understand why she plays Luna. I don't really have any, like...
Sure.
...gripes with, like, the casting there or anything. Like, I was like, yeah. I think they made her way more like platinum blonde. In the book, she has like dirty blonde hair, doesn't she? I didn't think she was platinum blonde. But we did talk about how I was like, for some reason, I think they upped her audio for like every scene. Because I was like, watch, like in real life, she was like, you're just as sane as I am. It was like so quiet.
That boom was like here on her face.
Yeah, the boom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The boom was like as close it could get, and it was like amped up.
Yeah.
The gain, honey.
The gain on the microphone.
All of her lines sound so like whispery.
Yes.
Which is, I think, exactly what they were going for. So, like, hats off to her. I cannot remember her name off the top of my head.
Emma Lynch.
Emma Lynch. Yeah. So they get to Hogwarts, they're in the Great Hall, Umbridge does her little speech where she interrupts Dumbledore and then does her little bit. 100% her costumes were inspired by the Queen. Like her little hat, the purse, that like tweed, pink tweed material, mm-hmm. pink knit.
Mm-hmm. So... when we watch this movie together, every scene, I was like, they are nailing it on these Umbridge costumes. Okay? You remember? I said this.
Yeah.
Okay. Last night,
Adam's
I'm watching...
very pro-Umbridge, y'all. No,
I stan a self... A
An
self,
Umbridge stan.
Yeah. We love a... You know what? I support women's rights and women's wrongs.
Yeah, and women's wrongs.
Last night, I was watching this, and then I go... why is she not wearing like wizard clothes though? Then I was like bothered by it because I was like, they're too.
Because her stuff is, it's more modern.
They're too muggle.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they went in that direction. They should have just done like pink robes. Listen, I love, on one hand, my brain is like, I love these outfits, A, because they're so pink and that's my favorite color. And also like, because I think they really tell you a lot about this character. But on the other hand, I'm like, but also this character is so like, I'm a part of the wizarding community that I don't think she would be like, I picked this up at Harrods or whatever.
Yeah, they could have made it a little bit more witchy.
Yeah, it needed to be a little bit like have something off to it. Because at the table of like all at the staff table.
Yeah.
Everyone is in like. Wizarding regalia
robes.
And she is like just coming in with my little Chanel suit, love it.
Yeah
I like this hat though.
Yeah, no, that's true, that's a good point. I think for some I didn't think of it like that, because for whatever reason for her it works in the sense of like, I mean, I guess Fudge still wears robes, but it's like how he always wears like a pinstripe suit.
He has a suit under his robe. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was like, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. That she should have still at least had something that was a bit more of like a witchy flair to the outfit.
The problem. And I understand what the problem is really, because we associate like long drapey, droopy fabrics with that kind of like, a very Trelawney energy.
Yeah, Trelawney. I was going to say more bohemian, that kind of style.
Yes, and she's so not that. With McGonagall, she also is not that, but they pull it off for her because she looks like the most like, she's like the classic image of a witch. Like it's a black robe, it's a black pointy hat, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
But that's already on lock. So what else are you able to do to kind of play in that world a little bit? It would be, I don't envy them. It would be hard to, I think it's still a good idea and a good job.
Definitely.
But yeah, there's definitely like a lot to think about with stuff like that.
Yeah. Cause she is like the only witch that is like full muggle.
Yeah.
Regalia.
Yeah.
So after she does her little speech there, Hermione's like this, it means that the ministry is interfering at Hogwarts, just like she says in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then cut once again, pacing is like, let's go. We cut to the Gryffindor common room And Seamus, like, really goes in on Harry.
Yeah.
It was like he was, they were about to fight.
Yeah.
Like, I was ready for him to, like, get his little fisty cuffs up. I was like, mm-hmm. dude, it's fine to be, like, uncomfortable, but he was literally, like, ready to fight him.
Yeah.
It was very strange. So that's an example where I was like, okay, that was a bit too much.
Yeah, dial it back.
Yeah. And then that energy is supposed to be coming from Harry. Harry's supposed to be the one that's like, rah! Not Seamus.
Right. Yeah. Why is Seamus even at a point where he's like that? He's so upset. He's mad
about it.
Like,
cause then when he asks him, he's just like, oh, well, what the prophet's been saying about you. And you know, no one really knows what was there, but I was like, yeah, but why are you like about to slap him? It was so weird. It was very strange.
I trusted you, bitch.
Yeah. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. He's taking this personally.
Yeah.
So Ron comes in, defends Harry, which I actually really appreciated this moment, because I think in the book it's a bit more like Ron kind of doesn't know what to do. So I appreciated that in the film he takes more of a very clear stance that he believes Harry. Mm-hmm. And he's like, does anyone else have an issue with Harry? And no one says anything. And then they go up to their dormitory.
Yeah.
And then Harry's an ass to Ron. Because Ron's like, he'll be okay. He'll come around. And Harry's like, I said I'm fine. Leave me alone. So then Ron's like, okay, I'll leave you to your thoughts, I guess. And then goes downstairs. And then we have a moment of Harry doing the...
Oh, yeah.
Thing.
Is it supposed to be like a snake thing?
I don't know.
I don't know what it is. It's so evocative. It's so weird. Just like a... It's like the image I associate with this movie, like specifically. It's so.
Yeah. Yeah. He's just like twitching, trying to shake it off.
Yeah.
And then there's another dream. So he has a dream about Voldemort, but also about the room, the mystery room, the orb room. I don't know what else to call it.
He sees the fucking prophecy.
Yeah, right away.
There's a shot of it.
All right.
And then there's like a very, okay, this is such a specific reference. There's this shot of Voldemort who's just like doing like big arms in like a void black space. And it's very in Halloween Town. It's very Calabar at the top.
Oh,
of like
yes, it is town. Calabar. Oh my God, you're right. That is. It's giving Wait, is it Calabar?
Yes, it's Calabar.
Yeah. It's giving Calabar.
It's giving Calabar.
Oh my God, love. Oh my God. Please, Adam, please find the photo of Calabar and have it. And then. Oh my gosh. Iconic.
Calabar.
So he wakes up from this nightmare, and then Ron is watching him. Do you know what I like to imagine now that you've said the bit about Calabar? What? I like to imagine that Harry was doing
it. Yes, he's emulating everything he sees in his sleep.
And that's why so Ron funny. Was looking at him, because he was like, you okay, bro?
What's going on?
Yeah, and like, it's giving Calabar. So the next day they have their first class with Umbridge, where she introduced the Wands Away policy, and she gives them this little kid book, which, do you know what this book looks like? It looks like those t-shirts that are, they look like kind of little like nursery rhyme animation, but then whatever the text on it is like a very adult text. I don't know what the actual brand.
No, I don't know this.
Oh my gosh. I wish hopefully someone knows. But I cannot remember. They typically were sold at like Hot Topic and stuff like that. They're more recent. But when I was looking at the animation or the sketch of on the front of the book, I was like, oh, that looks exactly like that.
Hmm.
So Umbridge and Harry have their first little moment in this class, and Harry earns himself his first detention.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to the detention, obviously, where he begins cutting into his hand for the first time. And we have this moment where she's like, yes. And then he just says nothing, to which she responds, that's right, because you like deep down, you know, you deserve to be punished. And then the next scene. It's
so sadistic. It's crazy. Yes. She's so good.
She is sinister. Yeah.
Can I just love these walls being painted pink. It's so funny.
I know. So her funny. Office. Yeah. And all the little kitten. Because the whole time we have a scene with her, you can hear the kittens like mewling.
Yes.
The entire
it's
time.
It's so fun. Also weird that you can. Well, I guess. Because are they...
The portraits can talk.
Are they portraits? Are they pictures?
I don't know.
Aren't they like on like...
Plates.
They're on plates, right?
But maybe because they're decorative plates.
They're still
know.
Paintings, technically.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very funny.
Yeah. So after the detention, Harry's back in the Gryffindor common room and Hermione notices his hand right away. And she's like, you need to tell someone. They're both like, you need to tell someone. Which I did like this a bit more that like they are more pro him like confessing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Rather than that it's like from the, cause I'm like, that's how we as the audience, I think, feel that we're like, tell someone. So mm-hmm. it kind of helped that his friends were voicing that.
Yeah.
They're like, you have to tell. And like Ron is agreeing that he's like this.
It's crazy.
Like, you cannot let this keep happening. Yeah. And then there is this, it's just more of him alienating himself. And there is this lovely line from Hermione because he's like, you don't understand. And she's like, well, then help us to, mm-hmm. which I thought was a beautiful line because it's like, they're trying, like they're trying to help him. Like they genuinely are such good friends. So then Harry wanders off by himself. I believe it's the next day that he ends up writing a letter to Sirius. And then he wanders out into the forest to see the Thestrals. And there's Luna.
Girl, I skipped barefoot. This whole scene last night. I said, who cares?
I bet you did. But I think, so first off, this she is straight up barefoot. And do you know how cold Scotland is? Like, at this time of year?
It's like probably October,
no
right?
way she's not wearing shoes.
At this point in the story?
It has to be at least October. He has a jacket on. It has to be October or November.
She says she's lost all of her shoes.
All her shoes.
So she's just... So when we... Did you... I should have watched to look and see at the end of the movie if she's wearing shoes. When they go to the Ministry of Magic.
Yeah, she's wearing shoes then and at the end when she has this last scene with Harry.
Very weird.
So I noticed actually in this movie, Luna is used as a tool for Harry to process his grief because she's the only other character mm-hmm. that has experienced death, which I do think is a really beautiful, the scenes with Luna and Harry, I actually think are really lovely. Mm-hmm. Like when you actually listen to the dialogue and what they talk about, they are really lovely. There isn't other than obviously Neville would be the closest character to have experienced a grief. But I think because it's not actual death, that's why Luna was brought in to kind of help mm-hmm. Harry process it. Because at both of the times that they have scenes together, they talk about death, mm-hmm. I noticed. So well, I don't really have that much.
He talks about it and she whispers.
Yeah. Yes. Sorry about your godfather. But I think because these scenes are a bit more intimate, this is why there's people have developed a ship for Harry and Luna.
Mm-hmm.
Because the scenes, it is an intimate feel, but not in a romantic intimate way. So I don't, there's not really much else to say about that scene of them like in the woods. But I do think that the Thestral design is incredible. There's like a shot where you really see all the detail of like the Thestral lifting up its wing and all the like bones. It just was really great and really detailed.
Mm-hmm.
So after talking to Luna, Harry, I guess, feels a little bit better and he doesn't want to alienate himself anymore. So this was the moment, Adam, where he goes into the Great Hall and he's like, can I join you? Do you remember this moment?
Her name is Ivana Lynch, by the way. I said Emma Lynch earlier. I was wrong. I apologize.
Oh, Ivana.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. Ivana Lynch. Yeah. Yeah, he comes into the Great Hall and is like, can I join you? Do you remember? At the
yes. And I had the same thought last night where I was like, Where else were you gonna go sit at the Slytherin table? Like, what are you talking about?
Where else were you gonna sit?
Can I join you?
Yeah, yeah. You. This is your house table.
Okay.
And then we have this iconic Minerva and Dolores scene on the steps of the palace. That's for Adam.
Yes. Yes. We have to talk about the scene because I realize what she is saying in the scene. And then I was like, huh? Okay. Continue with your thought.
No, that was it. I was just going to say this scene is iconic and she becomes High Inquisitor like the next day. So what were you going to say?
McGonagall is scolding her for her disciplinary methods. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
She calls them medieval.
She knows. So in the film, she knows.
Yeah.
That she's sadistic basically at this point.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Wow. No, I missed that bit. I always think of the whole like disloyalty.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Exchange. It's, so I missed
it starts
the
where she's like, you shouldn't be disciplining students like this. And then she's like, how dare you question my authority? That's
see, this is why you need to have the subtitles.
This is why you gotta have you gotta have the subtitles on. You gotta watch it more
gotta
than once.
Gotta know word for word.
So silly of me, but it sounds as if you're questioning my authority in my own classroom. Minerva.
Not at all, Dolores. Merely your medieval methods.
I am sorry, dear. But to question my practices is to question the ministry, and by extension, the minister himself. I am a tolerant woman, but the one thing I will not stand for is disloyalty.
Disloyalty.
Things at Hogwarts are far worse than I feared. Cornelius will want to take immediate action.